Monday, right now on The Morning Machine.
And you know what time it is. It is the top of the hour, and it is Monday! You know what's going on. It's the beginning of the week, and you know what we come here for every single week. You got to get it started right. And what better way to do it right than to start off with Mental Health and Mindset Monday, the Power Hour, the one and only Power Hour. You can only get it here. That's right. You can only get it here exclusively on The Morning Machine and the 102.6 The Situation. Good morning, Grand Rising, everybody out there in the land, radio land. Thank you for making The Machine a part of your daily morning routine. Let's start that routine now in the Power Hour with the mental health side with Dr. Earl Bowen Jr., who is assistant professor in social and behavioral science and a university counselor at the Cheney University of Pennsylvania. He is licensed by the Pennsylvania State Board of Social Workers, Marriage and Family Therapists, and Professional Counselors. He is also certified in Dialectical Behavioral Therapy. Now, Dr. Bowen has completed countless research, and there's publications out there that you can read that he has done this research. He's deeply into this research. So, when he speaks, we are listening with those open ears of ours this morning and every Monday morning. Now, furthermore, additionally, Dr. Bowen serves as associate rabbi at Congregation Temple Bethel, located in my hometown. And I don't care if the Sixers lost, we'll pick it up again tonight because it is important to Dr. Bowen. I update him every single time until the season ends. That's right. It's time for Mental Health Monday with Dr. Bowen. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Brother Rob. Good morning.
Yes, it is a powerful morning indeed. Another great start to the week. And hopefully the weather is great in your neck of the woods out there in Radio Land. But we need to continue to have the conversation about mental health. So what's on the topic list for today, Dr. Bowen?
Well, you know, my main topic today, Brother Rob, is going to be on dealing with our emotions. Emotions, very, very powerful. And although, you know, we talk about being logical, sometimes emotions can supersede logic. So I'm going to talk, I think maybe in an early stage of our talk this morning about emotional regulation. That is, we all go through highs and lows, but how do you regulate those emotions in a way where you don't totally go off off the hook, so to speak? And beyond that, though, I do want to talk briefly this morning about family grief. I'm not sure you wouldn't know this, Brother Rob, but a week or so ago, one of our students at Cheney University was involved in a head-on collision, drunk driver driving on the wrong side of the road, head-on collision.
Wow.
She died instantly. Mm. So last week, you know, I had, yes, sir, appreciate it. Last week I had several students, two of them were her roommates, come in to talk to me. As you can imagine, very emotional time. And then on Friday just passed, we had the memorial service for her and her family, and came, and, you know, it was quite emotional. And so that got me to thinking about family grief. You know, it's we grieve individually, but family grief is also another way of looking at how we come together. And family does not always mean biological family. You know, we looked at this particular student as part of our Cheney family. So, you know, with Black people, family takes on a broader definition. But, you know, I don't have to go into that. I'm sure you know that. But anyway, so I want to talk a little bit about family grief as well. But before we get to that, I want to talk a little about emotional self-regulation. And so the first thing is the what, and then the why. What do I mean by emotional self-regulation? Emotional self-regulation is the ability to manage and control your own emotions. I mean, in a nutshell, that's what self-regulation, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's the ability to manage and control your own emotions. Not only your own emotions, but your thoughts and your behavior in response to sometimes internal, but sometimes external situations. And so that's basically what we're talking about when we talk about self-regulation. It's really all about modulating emotions effectively. Modulating emotions effectively. It means maintaining emotional stability. It means adapting to different situations without getting overwhelmed by strong emotions. That could be happiness as well as anger. So, you know, that's not always an easy thing. It's easier said than done. But for the most part, that's the essence of what we talk about when we talk about self-regulation. That's sort of the what. The other question is the why. You know, why is this important? For one thing, self-regulation helps us to better communicate with others. It also helps us in terms of conflict resolution. So if you're really bent out of shape emotionally, you're probably not in a very good state to resolve conflict. Actually, high levels of emotional reactivity could mean an escalation of conflict. So self-regulation of emotions can help to deal with conflict resolution more effectively. It also fosters things like empathy, and also it fosters healthier relationships with others. So if your emotions are all over the place, it's very hard to maintain a healthy relationship with other people. So that's sort of the why, right? It helps to better communicate. It helps us to resolve conflicts in a way that's more effective. It adds to empathy, and it fosters healthier relationships with other people. It also builds something that I've talked about, I know, in the past, resilience. And it also enhances the ability to make better decisions. So when you're in a high level of emotional state, you're probably not in a good place to make decisions. I mean, I'm talking about decisions that are wise. You know, you may need to come down a little bit. And so that's also part of the why. Not only does it build resistance, but it enhances our ability to better make decisions. And in making decisions, we actually improve our level of productivity. And so that's sort of the why. A lot of emotional reactivity actually starts in childhood. So emotional reactivity is really a combination of biological, psychological, and environmental factors that happens to evolve over different stages in our life. So if you meet or you talk to an adult who is a highly emotional person, always sort of over the cliff, what you will invariably find if you spend time talking to that individual is that a lot of those things also emanate from their childhood. And so this is all something. So what I'm talking about this morning are actually learned behaviors, behaviors that we learn over time. The flip side of that is because they're learned behaviors, they can also be unlearned, or they can be modified to a great, great degree. So understanding the what and the why, of course, the next question is, how do we improve emotional self-regulation skills. How do we do that? So if you are a person that have difficulty in managing intense emotions like anger, maybe sadness, maybe anxiety, then maybe you need to work on your emotional self-regulation skills. So this talk is not for everybody. It's just people who have difficulty managing intense emotions. And when I talk about intense emotions, as I said, I'm talking about anger, talking about sadness, and I'm talking about anxiety. There are more, but those are actually three of the most prominent ones that we talk about. The reason is that when these emotions are not managed, they can result in outbursts, which means you may tend to say things that normally you would not say, and actually you might come to regret later. So it can result in outbursts. It can also result in things like mood swings, where, you know, you see a person kind of one day they're in one mood, the next day they're in another mood. That moods tend to change swiftly. And so not only outbursts, but also mood swings. And sometimes an emotional shutdown, where you just emotionally shut down. These are also things that can happen when you're really having difficulty regulating your emotions. So people may say, oh, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong. But you notice through their behavior that something is wrong. And so it is something to think about. The other thing is about emotional reactivity is that it can actually lead to not only emotional reactions, but impulses or urges. So you may tend to do something without thinking about a particular consequence of that action, just reacting based on impulse or urges. So these things can be varied. It could be something like overeating. It could be substance abuse, where you overly indulge in drugs and alcohol. And as I mentioned before, it could be reckless decision-making, that kind of thing. So there are actually only a few areas that I do want to talk about in terms of how you might go about addressing emotional reactivity and lead to a greater level of self-regulation when it comes to our emotions. And one is, again, something I've talked about over and over, but it needs to be repeated, and that would be deep breathing exercises. So when you see yourself becoming emotionally driven toward doing something that you might say or do that you might regret later, you might want to practice breathing exercises. The reason that breathing exercises are important is because, number one, it can increase self-awareness. And at the same time, it promotes a sense of calmness. So if you're taking those deep breaths, if you're holding them in 5 seconds and blowing them out, not only does it increase self-awareness, but it promotes a sense of calming. It has a calming effect. Now, doing these breathing exercises, you should also try to relax. Try to reduce stress and tension. That's one of the things that you might want to think about. The other would be identifying the triggers. We all have triggers. And by that I mean identifying either people or thoughts that trigger and that will trigger a strong emotional reaction. So what are the triggers? What are those things that tend to happen that really will push your button where you might go off on this tangent of emotional reactivity? Identify what those triggers are. And by identifying the triggers, you can expect emotional responses and find ways to manage them effectively. But if you don't identify the triggers, you will tend to do the same thing over and over. It's like the classic definition of insanity, right? Expecting different results, but doing the same thing. So it's important that you identify what those triggers are that tend to trigger your emotional reactivity. The third is really to develop emotional awareness. And by that, I mean practice labeling your emotions. That is, give your emotions, give them a name, whether that's positive or negative. By naming and labeling the emotion, it can help you in understanding the underlying reason or reasons for your feelings. It can also empower you to address them effectively. So developing emotional awareness and labeling the emotions, giving them a name. Again, it helps you to understand what are the underlying reasons for these feelings that you have. And then finally, something that in mental health is called cognitive restructuring. Cognitive restructuring. And by that, we're really talking about reframing negative or distorted thoughts that contribute to emotional deregulation. Again, this is a mental exercise. It's part of sort of this idea of cognitive behavioral therapy, where you are beginning to reframe. That is, looking at the situation in a different way, right? And also looking at the thoughts in a different way, and that will contribute toward emotional deregulation. But it really requires you to exercise this sort of mental exercise in your mind before you start to go off the cliff, so to speak. So, again, using deep breathing exercises, identifying the triggers, developing emotional awareness, and utilizing cognitive restructuring can be very, very basic, simplistic things that you can practice as you start to look at emotional reactivity and emotional self-regulation. Now, we all go through these things, and so it's not anything, it doesn't mean that there's something quote-unquote wrong with you. It just means that this becomes something else that you, not only you, but we, because I'm human as you are, have to continue to work on. And a lot of it is really all about self-awareness. Not being too hard on ourselves, but also being very much attuned to who we are and what are those things that will push our buttons to the point where we will do or say something that we may later regret. And so that's a little bit about self-regulation that I just wanted to mention. And for the next few minutes, I believe it's something like maybe 12 minutes, I do want to talk about grief a little bit. It's one of those subjects that, you know, we all go through this whole time, this whole idea of grief and mourning. And I think it's particularly acute when there's been a sudden death. And as I mentioned about the student at Cheney, she was 19 years old. So she was actually getting ready to go into her senior year in college. Actually, her roommates were telling me that last time they were talking, they were laughing about what they were going to do their senior year. And so it's a sudden grief. It could actually have sometimes a more devastating impact. So I just want to talk a few minutes about the reactions to loss, which are actually all normal, of course. But they tend to be physical, behavioral, / cognitive, and also spiritual. So what are some of the physical symptoms that a person might be undergoing a period of intense grief? Usually they may manifest themselves in terms of headaches, tightness in the throat or chest, nausea, either weight gain or weight loss, sometimes oversensitivity, particularly to things like noise. They may want to be left alone in a quiet space. So when people start to exemplify, it doesn't always mean that it's reaction to grief, but if a person has just lost a loved one, it's not unusual that these physical symptoms will start to crop up, and to be aware of that. Of course, the other one really has to do with the change in behavior and also the cognitive reaction to things, that is the thinking of people in general. So going through a loss really could reflect things behaviorally, like rapid mood changes. So one minute you're in one mood, the next minute you've totally shifted to another mood. Restlessness, the inability to concentrate, intrusive thoughts, sleep problems, having dreams or nightmares, sometimes withdrawal from relationships. And the thing about the grieving process, as we all know, is that there's no set limit. There is no, like, well, you know what, it's time for you to now get back to your normal routine. In many instances, your life has actually changed dramatically. And so when we start to see particularly our loved ones go through these periods of mood changes, restlessness, inability to concentrate, sleep problems, nightmares, withdrawal, it's not personal. A lot of times it's just that they are working through the grieving process. And then there's the spiritual, turning toward having faith in a higher being. Now, for some people, that could go the other way. That is, there are people who are angry with this quote-unquote God, because, God, how could you allow this to happen? This is such a good person. And so sometimes that spiritual part of the reaction could be an anger. But then in many instances, it's actually turning toward this higher power that is not questioning our faith, but becoming stronger in our faith. And also, as we do that, a search for meaning. What does this mean? What does this mean as we go forward in life? And so these are other things that, well, again, a lot of times through talk therapy or talking to a friend or another significant others can help be helpful in that case. The other thing is how people communicate or express their feelings. Again, this is a very, very individualized way of responding to grief and mourning, because some people communicate or express their feelings inwardly. And so you'll see sometimes this people in the same family, some people are outwardly expressing grief. The other person may not express any grief, at least not outwardly. That does not mean that they don't express their feelings or emotions in this case, but that they have a different way of doing it. I think for the person who is trying to bring comfort to the bereaved, this is often difficult. And, of course, I went through this last week with some of the students. But I think one of the things that is important is that we acknowledge the reality of the loss. That's not always easy to do, obviously. But to acknowledge the reality of the loss, it is helping the person to process that loss in terms of what it means to them. And then embracing the pain of the loss with the person as well. So not only are you acknowledging that reality, helping them to acknowledge it, but helping also to embrace the pain of the loss. Remembering the person who is no longer present by maintaining some connection. Invariably, as I said earlier, this individual will now be developing a new self-identity based on a relationship that they had with the deceased. So developing a new self-identity actually becomes somewhat of an emergence into another person. That is, their life has taken such a dramatic turn. But it's very important as individuals within families develop a new self-identity that they continue to receive ongoing support from others, even though they may not outwardly seem to exemplify that they need that support. They probably do. But what happens in families particularly is that depending on the role that the person played, it could be a dramatic loss in the family. I remember my grandmother, who lived to be 100 years old, a blessed memory, when she passed, because she was a matriarchal figure in our family, someone had to step into that role. And so it sort of, after we started to reflect on it, someone else emerged as that central figure, but that did not happen like overnight or quickly. Again, it was a process. And I think if nothing else, the loss of a loved one and the journey toward recovering some sense of normality is a process that we all undergo individually, and it's something that we address. So I think our time has run out. There's probably a few other points about grieving and mourning that I wanted to talk about regarding families, but perhaps I'll pick up on that another time, Brother Rob. Mm-hmm. But with that, I'm going to end, and of course, as always, for you, Brother Rob, and all those who are listening this morning, always pray that your week will be good, fruitful, productive, and safe. So I'm going to sign off, and take care.